Okay. Or you could line up over here. That would be very orderly, but perhaps uncharacteristic.
So, as long as one state does not comply with the regulations, can this regulation be successful?
Oh, sure. Let me tell you how this is going to work. Under the law, we are required by May of this year to have states come into compliance with Real ID or else to decline to accept the state's driver's license for getting on an airplane or getting in a federal building. But the law does allow us to waive that with respect to any state that is coming into compliance with Real ID. And so we are creating a path for the states to get waivers as they begin the process of implementing the Real ID regulations. And all they need to do to begin with is to simply indicate that they're going to begin the process. And then we have a series of milestones to make sure we move forward in a disciplined way. About 40% of the people in this country already live in states which have begun the process of moving toward Real ID. And I think many more states are going to be joining as soon as we get these regulations out and people have an opportunity to analyze them. And I say that because we've had a lot of discussion, frankly, with the major states on these issues. Now, if a particular state were to say, we opt out, we're not going to participate at all, then the law is very clear. After May of this year, that state's driver's licenses will no longer be acceptable as a form of federal identification for getting on an airplane or getting into a federal building. The consequences of that is going to be, frankly, more inconvenience for the residents of that state. But that's what the law requires, and I'm going to obey the law. Yeah. Well, I think that's a very good question. I think that if you have states that decline to participate in Real ID, they may well find that they become a magnet for illegal immigrants, and that illegal immigrants go to get those state driver's licenses because they begin to see those as the only way they can come up with some kind of ID in order to work and stay in the country. Now, maybe the public in those states is going to think that's a great idea, you know, have a lot more illegal immigrants move in. I'll be curious to see the reaction. I can tell you, everything I've seen publicly is public concern about people who are here illegally using documents to facilitate their stay. And that's particularly true when the documents they're using are phony documents or documents that misrepresent what their legal status is. So we'll see how this all plays out over the next several months.
Secretary, you mentioned that the FTC says the cost of stolen IDs is $64 billion and legal or illegal immigrants cost only about 1% of that. But you seem to emphasize that the main danger here are the illegal immigrants in terms of theft, ID theft.
I'm actually not emphasizing one or the other. The most important thing from our standpoint, obviously, is terrorists. I mean, this concern about identification was born out of the need to make sure that when we have put people on a watch list to keep them off an airplane because they're dangerous, that we can determine whether someone is, who's watch listed is sneaking on using another person's identity. That's priority number one. But the other priorities follow as well. Having illegal immigrants using phony documents, that's a priority. Having con men steal identity in order to rip people off is a priority. And I'm certainly not suggesting that most illegal immigrants who use phony documents do it to rip people off. I'm saying these are all important concerns, and we can kill three birds with one stone if we get ourselves on a path to a secure driver's license. Yeah.
You said that you're not collecting any additional information, but you touted that as soon as people go into a DMV, they're going to get their picture taken.
Right.
Isn't that collecting additional information?
Well, their picture's taken now.
Not necessarily. You can walk into a DMV and, you know, schlep around and then get out.
I guess you could. I think if you walk into a DMV and just schlep around, they probably won't take your picture. But if you get in here and represent yourself as someone who is starting the process of applying for a driver's license, yeah, they will take your picture. I don't think taking your picture is any different from the kind of information that we collect now.
Doesn't that turn the DMV into an apparatus of
No, it turns the DMV into an apparatus of making sure it doesn't become victimized by people who try to get phony driver's licenses. You know, this is really basic common sense. And we have to get over the idea that every time we do something at the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. government, it automatically is a nefarious, evil thing. It's very simple. If someone comes in and pretends to be you in order to get your identity and steal your identity and victimize you, it's in your interest to prevent that from happening. And if we're doing our job properly, we're helping to protect your interests. And the way we're doing that is we're saying if we catch a person who has tried to pretend to be you and we reject them from getting a driver's license, let's make sure they don't go down the road to the next DMV where maybe someone's not quite so vigilant and they manage to perpetrate the scam down there. Perfect common sense, and in the end, the net winner is the legitimate person, is the person who is not going to be victimized, because we're not going to let someone come in again and again and again and try to beat the system. Yeah.
As of May this year, or do you think that will only begin for most of the states after this, at the end of 2009?
I think all that's going to be required as of May of this year is you have to begin the process. You have to indicate you're beginning the process and request an extension. Many states will be much further along than that, but I can't tell you off the top of my head which ones will be exactly where in the process. I think a number of states may, though, be able to come into compliance with at least the first stage of this within about a year.
And what, can you tell me exactly what's going to happen on May 2008 at airports across the country?
Well, what should happen and what I'm expecting is going to happen is the vast majority of states are going to be signed on to this, and therefore people will see no difference in the way they're handled at the airport. If a state were to opt out of this, then their license would no longer, as a matter of law, be accepted as identification for getting on an airplane. That means people from that state would have to come up with a different form of identification, or they might find themselves in secondary, because when people come without proper identification and they want to fly, they do wind up going into secondary and getting questioned. So it's going to be inconvenient. I mean, there's no question the law creates a very powerful incentive for states getting on board with this process. It doesn't make states do it, but convenience and common sense strongly counsel in favor of beginning to move down the path towards a secure form of identification.
Secretary Trudeau, a couple questions here. Could you tell us about the interplay between these rules today and WHTI, and anything going on with your negotiations with New York State on these issues?
Well, of course, we've announced where we are with New York, so that's out and in public. And at the time that we talked to New York and they agreed to get on board with Real ID, we had, as part of our back and forth with all the states, we had, I think, made it quite clear what this regulation was going to be. So there will be no surprise to them in this that they've been anticipating it. Just to put it in perspective, Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative has to do with crossing the border, in particular the land border between the United States and either Canada and Mexico. And as you know, in response to a lot of public demand, we have agreed to go forward with enhanced driver's licenses that would satisfy border crossing requirements. Now, enhanced driver's licenses will automatically be compliant with Real ID, but they will be have some additional features that are relevant for crossing the border that are not relevant for Real ID. So you might describe the enhanced a driver's license as Real ID Plus. And the state of Washington, I think this month, is beginning to issue its enhanced driver's licenses, and other states will follow this year. So what we will do is, again, we're looking to maximize the convenience for the American public, but in a way that actually promotes security and is consistent with privacy. Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could clarify, a little confused about the $8 and $2 figure. I remember when you were with Governor Napolitano of Arizona, you had mentioned a $5 to $6 per license fee. Could you just...
This is not a fee. What we're doing is we're taking the current cost estimate, which is a pretty generous estimate, I might say, which is under $4 billion for a period of 10 years nationwide. And if you were to extrapolate that over all the licenses, it would essentially, on a pro rata basis, come out to a cost of a little more than $8 per license. It doesn't mean that the states are going to charge necessarily $8. And I should point out that we have, in this year's appropriations, there will be available about $360 million for purposes of real ID work by the states. So the combination of the money we're making available this year and the reduced cost should largely eliminate the complaining about an unfunded mandate. Yes. Well, actually, I was pointing to the young lady next to you.
Hi. My question is, could you answer the argument that actually Real ID would make it easier for people to conduct the criminality, con men, et cetera, because what's happening is you're creating this trusted card. However, you cannot guarantee that it will never be forged. So when people forge it and it's trusted, therefore it would make it even easier for these con men to be able to conduct their crimes.
Yeah, that's a species of argument which goes under the heading of the perfect is the enemy of the good. There's nothing in the world that's foolproof, but the idea that we should have poor forms of identification that are easily forged and tampered with, because that way everyone will know they're worthless and not rely on them, strikes me as a really bizarre argument. We are eliminating through this measure maybe 99% of the risk, maybe 99.9% of the risk. That's a major step forward. Is it perfect? No. And if we're talking about, for example, getting into a top security facility, it's probably not going to be enough to have a real ID driver's license. But for the vast majority of people, it is a huge benefit to be able to have a high degree of confidence that the license that they're presented with is an accurate license and that the person is who they say they are. The alternative is for us to send a message to people that basically says driver's license is useless, it has no identification value, and it's the kind of thing you can pick up at like you know, an amusement park when you pay a few bucks and they do some kind of a funny identification. You know, I mean, if someone wants to make the case that we'll be safer by having degraded and readily counterfeited documentation, I mean, you're welcome to make the case. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah. How would it impact when you were talking Mexican? How will this impact the use of the Mexican matricula consular, which a lot of Mexicans, both legal and illegal, use to for all sorts of official business? How will this impact that?
Well, that document is, of course, not a driver's license. And I don't want to get too far afield into discussing other documents. Whatever your nationality, your ability to get a driver's license that's real ID compliant is going to require you to establish you are lawfully present in the country. So what that means is if you're a citizen or a legal permanent resident, you can get you can satisfy that requirement. If you're here on a two-year visa, you can get a license, but that license will expire when your visa expires. So whatever your basis for being here lawfully, your license will be coextensive with that, but it's not going to give you the ability to use the license beyond the scope of your legality.
Mr. Secretary, what's the logic of not having a biometric other than a photograph in this kind of supposedly secure ID?
We have nothing against a fingerprint. Some states have fingerprints. Some states don't. Again, you know, we're balancing risk. We believe the digital features of the license we're talking about, coupled with the embedded security features, are sufficient to do the trick. Also, frankly, fingerprint readers are not in sufficiently widespread use that having a fingerprint biometric would necessarily help very much. But states are free to have a fingerprint on, and some states do, in fact, have a fingerprint on.
To follow up, can I follow up with the question that you had said that it was either poor identification or secure identification through Real ID? However, as I had asked, that means that it makes it more valuable if people can forge the Real ID. And then when we look at number 5, which says that employers can now trust that be secure and distrusted identification. This means that it's going beyond entering nuclear facilities, boarding a plane. Now you're talking about employment.
Well, I think let's separate two things out. Again, I just have to say, you know, your argument that the more secure the document, the worse we are because the more we rely on it, the more dangerous it becomes. Under that theory, we should eliminate passports and let people come across the border using a note written by their third grade teacher. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to say that more security makes us more at risk. Nothing is perfect, but if we waited for the perfect, nothing would ever get done in human existence. As far as employment is concerned, we are not under this rule requiring that you have a real ID license for employment. It is probably reasonably predictable that as these licenses become more widely distributed, the reliability will make them attractive to people who are using identification for other purposes. You know, the marketplace is a very powerful tool. When people realize that there's a more trustworthy form of identification, they're going to flock to it. And when employers realize that there's a more trustworthy form of identification, they're going to want to rely on it. So you can't, you know, this is the basic working of common sense and the free market. People will gravitate to what works. What we need to do is enable people by giving them a tool that is a reliable tool, and that's what this is all about. Yes?
Will there be changes or responsibilities in relationship with sovereign tribes, especially those that overlap Canada and Mexico with U.S. and Canadian and Mexican?
I mean, I think the rule here with the driver's licenses affects, it's not any peculiar requirement for tribes. It doesn't put any special burden on them. And it's the same process you use now if you're part of a tribe to get a license, except that the business process will be a little bit more reliable and the card will be more reliable. You know, for the person going through the DMV, they may not see much of a difference. They'll get their picture taken up front instead of at the end. But a lot of the checking will take place behind the scenes. It'll be on the computer, and it'll be the person checking the databases. But I don't think the experience for the average person is going to be significantly or noticeably different than what they go through now. No, not necessarily a lot more documents. There'll be some documents will satisfy two or three of the requirements. For example, if you bring a passport and something with your address, like a utility bill, that may satisfy the requirements right there. If you bring a naturalization card and a social security card or a pay stub with your social security number and something to validate your address, that may satisfy the requirements. As it is now when you go to DMV, you do have to bring documents with you. And so, you know, we're going to be very clear in the regulation about the kinds of documents that you have to bring. And I think like with anything else, once people actually look at what they need to get on the various websites, it'll be very easy to come in with the requisite documents. Yeah.
The date for final implementation is December 1, 2017. That's more than 16 years after 9/11. I understand that you have made these changes in an effort to compromise with the states, but in the meantime, have you left a gaping hole in Homeland Security for too long a period of time?
You know, I'll tell you the truth, Gina, I wish I could have gotten this done last year. I mean, this is the reality of what we face at the Department of Homeland Security. On the one hand, I feel as keenly as anybody else the urgency about getting all these things done as quickly as possible. On the other hand, whenever we try to do something, everybody who finds it inconvenient or expensive starts to complain about it. And we've got to try to figure out a way to reconcile the competing demands of security with the practical realities of what it takes to implement a major program that touches a lot of people. So what we do in this area, as we do with everything else, is we manage the risk. We say to ourselves, what is the highest risk, and how do we take that off the table first? And then as we move forward over time, we move to the less risky issues. That's why we've got a program to get the card, phase one of the security upgrades up by the end of next year, the rest of them up by the middle of 2011, and then our first group of people, 15 and under, have to be completed by the end of 2014. Now, do I wish we could have done it more quickly? Absolutely. Practically everything in my domain I wish we could do more quickly. It's like building fence. You know, we're still on track to build that fence, but we're going to be in court pretty soon because people are going to be, are resisting us there. So the bottom line here is we are, and that's why I said the time for process and discussion has to come to an end. We've given everybody a fair hearing. We've had a lot of dialogue. We've picked up some useful advice, and we've incorporated it. But the last thing I'm going to do is put this off for 20 years. I think we're on a glide path that will get us where we need to go. I'm willing to predict, as sure as God made little green apples, that there'll be people out there who will immediately be running to find ways to overturn what we're doing or to kick this further or to restart the reboot the process to the very beginning again. And when they do that, you're going to have to ask them, are they prepared to wait not 10 years, but 20 years or 30 years? So this is a great teaching moment on the challenges of really reconfiguring the society so that we can take reasonable steps to secure ourselves in a way that is nevertheless consistent with our civil liberties and our prosperity.
Mr. Secretary, would you elaborate on what will happen in those states that opt out of it? How do people in those states get on airplanes and into federal buildings?
They're going to wind up bringing other documents that are satisfactory, or what will happen is if they don't have other documents, they're going to have to face what people face now when they show up at the airport and they don't have identification, which is they wind up going into secondary and we try to validate who they are. The last thing I want to do is punish citizens of the state who would love to have a real ID driver's license and can't get one because the state has voted to opt out of the program. There'll be other kinds of documentation available at the federal level, like, for example, the new pass card that the State Department is going to start taking applications for in February, the traditional passport. If you're in a northern state and you have Nexus, that can do the trick. So there'll be other options. I'm going to make a prediction that the public demand for having secure identification is going to be overwhelming. And we'll try to work with people whose states have opted out. But in the end, the rule is the rule. It's passed by Congress. It was enacted into the law of the land, and I'm obliged to enforce it. Yeah.
I'm Ernesto Riqueda, an Associated Press reporter for Latin America. And what is the minimum time of foreign-born persons staying legally in the U.S. would need to apply for real ID, and if real ID is for tourists?
It's not for tourists, because if you come in as a tourist, it's usually a three-month period of time, or a short period of time. This will be something, for example, if you come in as a student, you get a two-year visa as a student, that'll be the kind of temporary status that would make it sensible to have this kind of a license. And of course, we're going to key in one of the ways we're going to key in the licensing process is by having it connected to our Citizen and Immigration Service database. So if someone does come in with a visa, the DMV will be able to validate that it's a legitimate visa with the Citizenship and Immigration Services database. And if the time comes that Congress passes some kind of temporary worker program or enhances a temporary worker program, we can adjust to take account of those visas as well. The idea is ultimately to have a system that, as common sense would tell you, is synchronized, where your period of lawful presence in the country matches up to your period of a real ID license. And, once we complete this process, that's going to make it easier for the person who's here legitimately, and it's going to be easier for everybody who interacts with that person because they're going to have reliability and confidence in the documents that have been presented with.